Hello out there, all you filthy animals. This is Aya Freak, and you're listening to Wrestle Life Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What?
Ladies? Welcome. Yes, yes.
You don't think I mean, I guess we do have lady viewers.
Yeah.
Or listeners.
Yeah. Yes, we have lady viewer. We have one. There's one out there.
It's wife.
Well, I'm here, guys.
Oh, there she is. Here. You talk about her and she appears. There's our one female viewer.
So today.
Wait, Riley doesn't listen to the podcast?
No.
Only when she's on it.
She doesn't care about us.
She cares more about BTE than us.
Yeah. That's good.
We got to release that BTE parody I've been talking about for a year. Should watch that. Oh, man, that did not go off the rails at all. Ladies and gentlemen, today is a very special day because today is episode 150. My name is Matt Sin. I am here with B-Dubs, my beautiful wife, Carol. I am here with my little brother, Micah.
Hi, Micah.
Say hi, Micah. You did it. Did you do it?
I couldn't even hear you.
It's perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
It's a quick draw contest now.
Yes. And we're here with our cousin, Kyle.
Hi, Micah.
Hi. And you act like this doesn't go off the rails every show.
I guess that's true. So we're going to talk about Dynamite, and we're going to skip straight to it. We're going to skip this day in wrestling history because we've got a whole lot to go over. It was a very, very big loaded show tonight, or last night. Great show, in my opinion, but let's find out what everyone else thinks. Carol and I were there live for it. As we have been to most of the shows, other than the shows where we had the Rona that we couldn't go to. We've been to all of them. I also want to say that AEW just announced Sting will be competing in his first match at AEW Revolution, which just so happens to be February the 27th. Sting and Darby Allin will be tagging in a street fight against Ricky Starks and Brian Cage. Micah, we were talking a little bit about this before this started. What do you think about that before we get into Dynamite?
I kind of need to know more of what the street fight is. So if the street fight is a live match in the ring, like surrounded by barbed wire bats and tables and chairs, that is a horrible, horrible idea. Okay? Because you won't be able to use any sort of illusion that Sting is still Sting when he's not taking the bumps and they're all going to Darby Allin, right? Because Sting's not taking a table bump at 61 years old. Sting's not getting hit with barbed wire at 61 years old, at least I don't think. I mean, if he didn't do it in his prime, he's probably not doing it now, right? So if that's the case, that's a real weird way to debut a guy who hasn't wrestled in 4 or 5 years and is also 61 years old. However, if they're doing it in the vein of the parking lot brawl with Santana and Ortiz, where it was pre-recorded and edited, which that one actually wasn't, actually. I should correct myself. That was not an edited match. However, they had the opportunity to edit because it was pre-recorded. It wasn't live. It wasn't shot live. But it was one take. So if that's the case and they can edit it in, edit around it, I almost want to say like Randy versus Edge at WrestleMania, but that really wasn't a very good match.
No.
Yeah, don't say that.
But that was a match that, you know, was very safe for Edge to return with, but also technically like an extreme rules match for last man standing, whatever. So I think if they do it in a pre-recorded safe environment where they can control things and I don't know, like, how far do you think they should go with pre-tape matches? Are body doubles, that's a no, right? That's a no-go?
Yeah, this is wrestling. We don't need stunt doubles. No. Also, I'll be heartbroken if it's a pre-tape match because I want to see him wrestle live. I just want to say that. I just want to get that out there before the tears start flowing.
I mean, I get that, but I would rather watch a pre-tape match than watch Matt Hardy at All Out again.
That is fair.
So, especially with Sting. I mean, so we love Matt Hardy.
He ain't doing that, though. Like, it ain't happening.
Yeah. He's too smart for that, I think.
Yeah.
I think if it's pre-taped, it would probably be better. If it's a street fight, as in, you know, if some street fights have been through the years where they just are in a regular wrestling match and maybe bring a chair in but are also wearing jeans, as some WWE street fights have been.
Right.
that would be kind of okay. I mean, obviously Sting doesn't need to wear jeans, but you know, it's just a regular match with maybe a chair or two thrown in, a baseball bat or two to the head of Brian Cage.
Darby Allin taking one or two insane bumps.
One or two? You underestimate. This is a pay-per-view, man. He did more than that on TV.
That's true.
Yeah, he's coming from the scaffolding this time. Darby Allin will take all the bumps. And I think Ricky Starks would be a good matchup for Sting because he's a smaller guy.
Yeah.
And I think Sting could probably still do some like scoop slams and stuff on a Ricky Starks.
Oh, yeah.
Easy. Clotheslines, you know, just general wrestling work. You got to think, Sting is 61, but he's only, what, 4 or 5 years older than Dustin?
Yeah.
And
I think Dustin's 52, I think.
So. Oh, is he 52? I thought he's 56. Maybe, I'm thinking of Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn is like 56. Either way, someone at that age can perform basic wrestling and not kill themselves. So we'll see. And when you have the mystique of Sting, I think it works better. Not only that, he hasn't taken near as many bumps as some of these other guys because he took a good, I don't know, 10 years off overall throughout his career.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his body is not quite as beat up as some other guys.
Hmm. Billy Gunn is 57, by the way. Dustin's 51.
Okay. So he's 4 years older than Billy.
Yeah.
Although Billy is a behemoth, freak, crazy.
Yeah, he was just in some, like,
thing. He's not real.
He's juicing, so.
Yeah. He's in the muscle thing. I don't know.
He's doing the muscle thing. He's got all the muscles.
He was in the muscle competition. I don't know what
bodybuilding?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's the word. That's what I'm looking for. Let's pass right on that and pretend that didn't happen. We're going to get into Dynamite.
I do want to say real quick about the Sting Street Fight match. I'll keep it short. Did you guys see Brian Cage kill Darby Allin?
When?
Last week? Oh, yeah.
Oh, when he threw him on the table?
Yeah.
Was ridiculous.
No, just the entire match.
Yeah, their whole match.
So, yes. Like, I don't know, him being in a match with Sting, like, they announced that, and I'm just like...
Well, it's not Brian Cage's fault that Darby wants to commit suicide on the
ring. That is true.
I don't know. We'll see. Right. I kind of agree. I tend to agree with Micah, but... Still,
that was not Brian Cage's call. I guarantee you, that was Darby saying, "Hey, pick me up and throw me over there." And he's like, "Okay."
Well, I would probably go to argue Brian Cage probably didn't object to it. He's like, "All right,
yeah,
yeah, I'm sure."
Remember, hey, Undertaker is one of the most well-respected wrestlers in all of history, and Mick Foley said, "Throw me off the cell," and he said, "Okay," and just did it.
He thought he killed him.
He did. He literally thought the choke slam where it came. Yeah, the second one, he thought he murdered the guy.
By the way, since we're on the topic of steroids and The Undertaker, have you listened to his Joe Rogan interview yet?
No.
I listened to a good portion of it today, and it's so funny. Joe Rogan was interviewing him, and he was talking about steroids and all that, and he's like, "So why don't they let you guys juice?" And he's like, "Oh, man, because we had all the issues and blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "Yeah, but some of you juice, right?" It's like, "Well, they test me, and if I couldn't get away with it." So they're pulling up pictures of, he's like, "So who's the biggest guy in WWE?" He says, "Probably Braun Strowman." And they pull up a picture of Braun Strowman, and Joe just burst out laughing. He's like, "Yeah, that guy's not on steroids." I just thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Come on. Joe was like, "Okay, there's a chance that he's not on steroids, but he's on steroids." I thought it was pretty funny. And Joe was saying that he thinks that if he were to run a wrestling organization, he would have a requirement where you have to be on steroids. They would test you for steroids, and if you tested negative, he would fire you.
Well, that happened in the 80s in WWE, basically, and Vince McMahon almost went to jail for it. So, So yeah, that's basically what
happened. Don't take legal advice from Joe Rogan.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Brody Lee Jr.'s birthday celebration. This is how we opened AEW Dynamite.
We did.
And B-dubs, I'm going to let you tell us how the show opened with Brody Jr.'s birthday celebration.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. It was delightful.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. The Dark Order comes out with a cake.
Mm-hmm.
So you're excited because you know somebody's face is going to end up in the cake.
Yep.
And then he comes out, he's wearing Brody Lee's jacket.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's sweet. And he's...
And it's gigantic on him, of course.
He comes out and we all sing happy birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Chaos Project. The Chaos Project or Chaos Project?
Chaos Project.
Okay, Chaos Project.
It doesn't matter. I mean,
Serpentico's great. And boo, everybody boo. And Luther tells us that, or he tells Negative One off and tells mm-hmm. him, you know.
Who Luther did kind of great promo.
I'll be honest with you, that's the best I've ever heard Luther on the mic. That's the best thing Luther's ever done in his life in existence.
He's talking to the kid, tell him, we don't care about your birthday. We're going to ruin your birthday. And then brawl ensues and
mm-hmm.
Negative One gets in a good hit on, who did he hit with the kendo stick?
Luther.
Was it Luther?
That was in
after the match, though.
It was, okay, it was later.
You're jumping ahead, Carol.
I know I'm jumping ahead.
We never do that here.
I'm jumping to the good stuff. What else? It was good.
Yeah, so the Dark Order attacks the Chaos Project. THQ comes out to make the save. And then here comes Hangman Page. His music hits. We all have a big pop. And then all seven of your guys are down on the ground. But here comes Hangman, who jumps off the stage, dives off the stage. And hits basically everyone but Colt Cabana, because Colt Cabana is smart and got out of the way. Because he's not catching anybody anymore. He's too old. So everyone else caught him. Hangman gets up. I believe it was John Silver throwing... I can't remember who it was. I think it was Jack Evans. No, it was Angelico in the ring. And the match got started.
I do want to say, Hangman, what I found hilarious about it was... It was like he wasn't watching TV in the back or anything. He was just like getting ready for his match and getting pumped up. Because he walks out to his music... Everybody's fighting on the ground, and he's just like, you know, just doing his cowboy stuff, walking out there. He's like, oh, yeah, this is my entrance. And he just notices a crowd of people on the ground. He's just, huh? And he just takes off running and just dives on all of them out of nowhere.
It was a great dive. It was a spot of the night for me.
It was really great. It was really good. The whole match was good, though. Luther had limited time in the ring, but even when he was in, it seemed pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess his match was okay. It definitely wasn't my favorite match between the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy by any stretch, because I think their previous match was a little bit better, even though the booking was poor. I was glad to see Negative One out there, really glad to see all the support they've been giving him and his family throughout all of this. Amanda Huber actually mentioned on Twitter today that when they went to Disney for Negative One's actual birthday, he told his mom that, yeah, Disney's cool and all, but I'd rather be at AEW, which is pretty cool when this kid prefers going to his dad's work than going to Disney World. I mean, that's pretty cool. Cody has obviously been taking up a lot of them, the whole roster, really. So that's really cool to see. There was a couple really good spots with John Silver and Alex Reynolds. The dive in the beginning was really good with Hangman. Nothing else super stood out for me. I don't remember it being super long either.
It wasn't. They did put Luther's face in the cake.
Yes, which was great. And
I thought this match was really fun. Like, it wasn't the best match on the show, obviously, but like it was fun. And I don't know.
I liked it a lot too.
Yeah. I don't know if we said what happened at the end, but basically I really liked the ending of it. Like Matt said, Luther basically drug out Colt Cabana up to the top of the stage. He was going to powerbomb him through the cake and ruin Negative One's birthday, but Negative One wasn't having it. So he came over and whacked him in the head with a kendo stick, which obviously led to Luther getting shoved into the cake. Says, I mean, it's a wrestling show. There's a cake out there. They didn't eat it. So it's obviously getting destroyed.
Johnny Hungy.
Well,
yeah,
he
stuck his finger in it. So
that was hilarious.
But he had it in his beard for like the rest of the segment.
But the ending I thought was really awesome, because they who did they isolate at the end that took the? I mean, I honestly don't even remember, but it was just so cool. They did an awesome trios finisher, basically, where they Hangman. It was basically Reynolds and Silver doing their double team move, where they go into the German suplex cradle, but. Mm-hmm. Silver got him in this like German suplex position. Hangman comes over the rope with the buckshot lariat as he's like suplexing him. And then they do the cradle. Like, it was just so awesome. These guys need to be a trio team. They need to come up with trio belts. And it'd be amazing. So I thought this was fun. It was good. I will say, I listened today to Wrestling Observer, and Dave Meltzer, though he liked the match, did kind of say that if you didn't know what was going on and like you're viewing for the first time, which I don't know why you would if, you know, but I get it. Casual viewer. He said it came off a little low rent. And I've kind of thought that, like, I mean, I don't want to be a bad guy here. It's the kid's birthday. And even Dave said he enjoyed it. It was great for, you know, this kid's dad just died. It's his birthday. And it's got to be tough on their family. So it was great to see for sure. But I agree that I don't necessarily want to see negative one on TV every week. And I don't think he will. But for his birthday and for this segment, it was great. I loved it. So thumbs up for me.
I said the same thing about The Waiting Room last week. I feel like it was a decent segment just for the casual viewer. I think it seemed kind of low quality. Yeah. And I agree with that for this. But, I mean, all external circumstances, hey,
right.
Yeah. Let the kid hit Serpentico with a kendo stick. You know? I think that's perfectly fine. I think it's a good way to honor Brody. And I don't think if you're tuning in, you could say at one hand, yeah, it looks low rent. On the other hand, you could be like, hey, this is a good company. They're giving this kid a really good time. You
know? Right.
So it's like AEW, one of their top, I think it is their top viewed video of all time is when Cody got pinned by that Orange Cassidy kid.
Right.
People like kids having fun. Yeah. So I don't think that's too bad of a thing.
Right.
But yeah, I agree with you. Hangman needs to join the Dark Order.
But so basically after the match, I'll just kind of go over it. Sure. After the match was over, we had Dark Order. They obviously were waiting on Hangman to answer their question if he was going to join the Dark Order. Mm-hmm. They got him in the ring. Johnny Silver gets on one knee like he's going to propose to the man, talks about how handsome he is, asks him, will you join the Dark Order? And I mean, I almost like this more than the match because it was just so great.
It's one of the best. The thing that came up on the screen and the people that came out that you're about to say, it's one of the best things that ever happened in AEW in wrestling.
Like it's
so good.
It's hilarious because Hangman, he grabs the mic. He reluctantly, he just says, I can't. And just like immediately up on the screen, it says, he said yes. And people there's like music playing, there's confetti. There's like, they hire dancers and entertainers to come out and celebrate with him. And not like the Dark Order's having to shoo him away. Like it is so goofy and funny. Like if you're watching these guys on BTE and you like them for that. And I mean, it's just like BTE Dark Order at its finest, basically.
Right.
And,
they've definitely went full BTE.
Yeah. So yeah, it was great. So Hangman pulls the heel move here. He's not turning heel, but he did pull a heel move here. But for a good reason, he tells him. He doesn't just leave him hanging. He says, listen, I tried the group thing before. It didn't work out, so I got a decline. So Hangman walks out. They play his music, and the Dark Order is left hanging. So,
As he's walking away, John Silver goes, Adam, no!
Yeah.
It was great. Poor Hangman, though. He's like, gosh, like he's almost like, I don't know how to say this, but he's such an emotionally developed character. Yep. Like, of honestly, any character on TV right now, his character development, his character work is so good.
Yeah.
Like, every time he's on screen, you feel for him. He's like a sad, sad puppy that, you know, his last owner was really mean to him and never fed him. And then now he doesn't know if he wants to love again. And somebody wanted to love him and he said no. And he just walked away with his little doggy alcohol. And it's so sad. Poor sad puppy Hangman.
Mm. What did you think about this, B-Dubs? I know you really liked this segment.
Well, I knew that they were going to incorporate He Said Yes.
Yeah?
As soon as Silver gets down on one knee. And then my favorite part was the dancers coming out and shooting them away. And one of them, I don't know if you saw this, one of them is like trying to scoop up the confetti to like attempt to get rid of it, I guess. That was funny.
Yeah, it was great. It was so good. The whole thing was good. Now, the next segment we didn't see live. It came up on the screen, but we didn't have any sound because why would you have sound at a live wrestling show? So Alex Marvez is backstage with Chris Jericho and MJF.
So he's backstage with MJF and Chris Jericho, and they're kind of just basically like leading up to the match, heading up tonight. There wasn't anything super eventful that you missed or anything going on with it. Chris Jericho is standing there shirtless to show off his abs. I feel like anytime people talk about how Chris Jericho is fat on Twitter, he instantly is like, you know what? I'm being shirtless in a segment with jeans on. Because every time, that's what happens. But yeah, nothing super important happened. They're just going over their match coming up.
Okay. Cool. Sting's out next. And he comes out wearing a Brody Lee shirt, which is really cool.
I thought that was cool, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. And Darby Allin comes out and joins him. And Sting says, look, I didn't get involved last week because I wanted to interrupt the match. I just wanted to make sure that Darby had a fair fight. And I just wanted to be the first person to congratulate you on your win. And they're immediately interrupted by Taz, who's up on the screen with Hook, Ricky Starks, Powerhouse Hobbs, and of course, Brian Cage. And he says that what Sting did, use the bat on Ricky, that's something that you do on the streets. And he says, Darby says, okay, Taz, you want to take it to the streets? Be careful what you wish for, because it just might happen. And then, today, they announce Sting and Darby Allin versus Brian Cage and Ricky Starks at Revolution. I thought this was good. It did the job. It was a little short.
I did not like the segment, mainly because we've been talking about Sting and his involvement and how we're like, okay, we get it. Need to pick things up. And they advertise him coming out to talk to Darby. He talks for like 2 seconds and the heels interrupt. And I don't know if they meant for that to like get heat or whatever, but for me, it was more of go away heat because I was just like,
it's God, just let the man talk.
Still being drawn out for so long. I mean, they booked a match, which is one thing. Like I said, I'm still not even sure about it because, you know, Brian Cage nearly killed Darby on his own. So I'm still apprehensive about him against Sting, but so I don't even necessarily want to see the match for that reason. And it's just like, I mean, I get why Team Taz would want to do something, but still, like, we got like 2 seconds of Sting talking to Darby. Like, we still don't even, he's just been showing up to help him because he wanted to congratulate him. Like, I mean, I know he also said that there's something about Darby that reminds him of himself. I mean, I was hoping he would at least say more than just face paint or something and like at least cut something of a promo, but we didn't even get that far. So I don't know. I just wasn't a fan of it. Like, it was fine, but I was just wanting more because they haven't really given us much from Sting since he's coming in. So
yeah.
I didn't like the segment either for the same reason Kyle said. Really? And also, I don't think Darby's very good on the mic.
He's not.
This time, it's just his delivery is very deadpan. It's very.
I think that's by design, though.
Well, yeah. But
there's just no emotion in his promos, though. Like, and I get that could be his character or whatever, but I don't like the way he delivers his lines. I feel nothing when he's cutting a promo. It just seems really amateur. And I get he's young, but he's also the TNT champion. So, like, you can't really use that excuse anymore, right?
Right.
If they put you in that spot. The last one he had when he was telling Taz that he's been dealing with crap like that his whole life. It was just like, it didn't seem real. And I felt the same way about this promo. So I don't know. I don't think Darby's super good at delivering promos.
I honestly just wish he'd stop cutting them because.
Yeah, I think he'd be better if he was a strong silent type like Crow Sting, like early Crow Sting.
I mean, we were talking about Undertaker on Joe Rogan's podcast earlier. I mean, he needs to be like Taker in a sense that just don't say anything. Show it through your actions. Cause I mean, he's not a great talker and I mean, he could get better. It's not saying he's a hopeless case or anything, but I feel like Darby wouldn't say, like Darby seems like the guy who wouldn't say anything. I've had friends like that who are skaters. And if somebody's like picking on them, they're not going to try to sound tough to them. They're just going to ignore them or just throw a punch. Like, you know, they're not going to try and act tough and, you know, do whatever. They're just going to get into it and brawl. So like, why does Darby need to say anything? Like talk to Sting if you're going to say something, but for him to just, you know, try and act tough to Brian Cage, who like almost killed him last week. It's just not believable.
Yeah. And like, look at Jeff Hardy. Like Jeff Hardy, even now, I don't really like his promos.
Yeah.
And looking at through his career, he's never really cut a lot of promos. Hardly ever. I mean, TNA maybe a little bit.
They were all bad.
But he, I mean, he doesn't have
that's,
to.
That's a stretch, but just it, not all.
Most of them, you yeah, know.
He's never been a good promo.
So just leave it. Leave it like it is, I think. I don't think he needs to force himself to be a promo guy if he's not, because you don't have to be, you know?
Darby Allin has cut one absolutely amazing promo in AEW.
What, which one was that?
I'm going to repeat the entire promo for you right here. John Moxley, I accept.
Yes.
Yes, that was good.
That was yep. a great promo. And that's yep. all they need to say.
And his pre-taped stuff is good, I think.
Yeah.
It's just when it's live in front of a crowd, I don't like it.
Yeah. Don Callis and Kenny Omega have sexy art, so let's move on to that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, let's not move on to it. Yeah, let's actually, pass by it.
Actually, honey, you're the one that's going to tell us about this. I'll tell you, but I want your feedback.
It's not my fault you went up and you took a bathroom break and missed it. I yeah. don't want to have to talk well, about it.
So, I went back and rewatched it, and the Young Bucks are walking into what we assume is Kenny's house. And they're like, the door's open, let's go inside. We go in, Nakazawa is in there, and like, I don't remember what he was wearing.
He was wearing like a hotel staff
yeah.
uniform.
And he had like a tablet?
He was carrying around a laptop, not a tablet, a laptop that was locked. He used to, the password needed to be used to open it.
I saw a comment online. It was like, I didn't know that Nakazawa lost a Young Boy match too.
And so he's there and he tells the Bucks they can come in. They go inside.
All they had to do was unlock the screen and put an yes. Amazon thing for like lotion on there or whatever he uses. Oil. All you needed. He's just so walking around with a locked laptop.
And they see this brand new oil painting. And it's these two shirtless guys, and these bodies are clearly not. And Kenny Omega's buff, but no. These are like Magic Mike style, low cut jeans.
It's John Morrison.
Yeah. No, bigger than that, though. Like huge, like somewhere between John Morrison and Brian Cage, right? Yeah. 8-pack.
It's like John Morrison on steroids, oiled up.
Right. And then if one of them's Kenny Omega, and the other one is Don Callis, who's got his elbow.
Who's equally as ripped.
He's somehow more ripped than Kenny Omega.
It's so good. And like Don Callis, I'm sitting here looking at the picture now. He's got like his thumb and his jeans, pulling it down just a little bit.
No, what? Not a little. Too much.
A little too much.
It's disgusting.
And so, for some reason, like Alex Marvez is there with him and like a camera guy.
It's like a bad, it's like a dream. Like you yeah. woke up from a dream and you're like, what was that about? Yeah.
And so Don Callis is like, comes up the Young Bucks and he's like, okay, guys, I'm glad you're here. He said, but we don't, you know, we want some privacy. And he says, Nakazawa-san, take Marvez to the dungeon. And Marvez starts freaking out. He's like, no. This is what we call like the workout room, you know? And to take the camera guy too. So he takes the camera and sits it down and says, now we have some privacy. And he says, look, guys.
No, what he said was, let me rephrase. He said, okay. Take the cameraman, but leave the camera so we have some privacy.
Right.
That doesn't yeah. make any sense.
As he carefully positions the camera to show exactly the three of them speaking.
Well, right. The whole point is Don Callis is pulling the strings. He's setting it up.
He wanted this. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's all part of his plan. I mean, it was definitely, you know, sounded weird, but basically he got into an argument with the Young Bucks when everybody left. Yes. I mean, they were already kind of, you know, getting into an argument with him and he was trying to keep them calm, but basically he was acting like they were like things were getting heated and they were going to, you know, punch him or something. So he starts backing up to cover the camera. And it just basically cuts off before we know it actually yeah. happens.
And you hear him scream.
Yeah. So it's obviously a ruse. Like Don Callis is trying to cause dissension between Kenny Omega, as we'll find out later, and the Young Bucks.
Yeah. But what led up to that was him telling the Young Bucks that, you know, you've known Kenny for what, 12 years? Well, look, Kenny's too nice to say it, so I'm going to say it. You guys are holding him down, but we got something for you. We got something for you. To, you know, make up for all that investment. Because 12 years is a long time. Then he gives him a check. And Matt's like, I made more than this last week. He's like, oh, you're right. You're merch guys, right? And he, like, writes him another check. And then Matt Jackson says, you know what? I know that company you work for. We were there. And I'll tell you, we know these checks are no good anyway. And he rips them up. And, of course, just everyone's like, ooh.
Very impact.
Yeah. Ooh, through the crowd.
Yeah.
Tony Schiavone loved that line.
Tony Khan like probably loved that line.
Yeah, Tony Schiavone likes this. Yep, 100%. But I thought this was the greatest segment in all the history of the segments, and that's a stretch. But I did legitimately love it. It was so funny.
The only thing I didn't like about it was Matt Jackson.
Really?
Nick played his part perfectly because he didn't really say anything. He let Don kind of take control of it. And Matt just kept interrupting him with like these one-liners. It felt like a BTE segment. And Don's like trying to talk. I understand, but like, I don't know, like he just didn't let him get a word in. It's like Don's like trying to explain this to him. And he just kind of upset. I get it, but I don't know. Like he just kept, I was like, at least I think I talk and then, you know, come back with your rebuttal. But it was like, they were trying to talk at the same time. So that was my only negative. I mean, I still enjoyed the segment. It was good. And I get where they're going with it. So I like it. And Don Callis is great. And, but yeah, I mean, it was just my one complaint.
As our viewers would share, I'm sure, the sentiment, there's no problem watching a show where people interrupt each other.
what do you mean by that?
Or listening,
what are you talking about?
Or listening to one.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
People should not look at us for like professionalism.
That's true.
We should not be the bar.
I didn't think it was a bad segment. I didn't think it was the greatest segment. I didn't think it like made a whole lot of sense. I don't think this whole story makes a whole lot of sense. It's kind of all over the place. It like part of me wonders where Kenny's storyline would be if Impact wasn't involved.
Yeah.
Like if it were just the Kenny Omega show, like would he be better off right now? Because I feel like so far still I'm kind of disappointed by his run. I mean, I know nothing's happened yet, but again, nothing's happened yet. How long has he been champ? I don't know. And it's also been some weird weeks, you know, you've had all the political stuff going on. So I feel like even tonight, I feel like it was kind of like everybody's going to be watching the inauguration show. Let's not book too much.
Yeah.
In my opinion, which believe it or not, 850,000 people watched it. They had pretty good ratings.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure where it's leading. Cause like, they also announced during the show Revolution, right? Is it Revolution?
When
is
no,
it?
I think it's no, Beach
Break.
Week.
Beach Break.
Yeah.
Kenny and the Good Brothers versus somebody. I don't know. Moxley, Darby. Pac. No, it's Moxley, Pac, and Phoenix.
That's right.
Yeah. And so, like, you're not getting a title match for that either. Who's Kenny face for the title?
Yeah.
Nobody. Really? I mean, he had one match against Rey Fénix, but I mean, he's been champ for 2 months?
It's been about 6-7 weeks because Winter's Coming was December the 2nd.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't want him to be too tied up in this whole, what do they call it? The bootleg club? Is that what we're calling it online?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Storyline to forget, hey, you're the face of the company. You're the champion. You need to do some stuff too. I don't know.
He is kind of, I could see where you're coming from for sure. I personally don't think he has to defend it as much. I mean, obviously Moxley's going to be a fighter. He's going to want to fight people. Omega's the heel. Like I kind of get it, but at the same time, I do agree. Like I am worried that like, because really Moxley's the only one that's even saying anything about Omega at this point. But there hasn't really been any talk of like rematch. Even Don Callis and Omega haven't mentioned like we're staying away from like Moxley. Like they haven't made that a point in the story. Like why hasn't there been a rematch, or why hasn't there been something to set it? So I get it. Yeah. It's and
every face in the company should be going after Kenny right now.
It's true.
I mean, he sold out their show to another promotion.
And it's really just a Bullet Club story. So I get it for sure.
Okay. Moving on. Cody Rhodes with Arn Anderson, who I forgot was out there like legitimately after the match, he came back up.
Snoop Dogg was busy. So,
Versus Peter Avalon.
Peter Avalon.
Yes. Respect on that name.
Well, lately, Peter Avalon has had this heart-shaped bed out by the ringside where he lounges with champagne or whatever it is. Last week was great. And we didn't get it on camera. We tried, but he moved. So he's sitting like on his knees.
Oh, he posted it.
On the bed, and he's got his like covers, because it's freezing.
Yeah,
it was freezing last week, and he's got his covers like up over his, he looks like it, I don't know how to describe it, like he's all snuggled up, And it was really funny. Mm-hmm. But anyways, he's been out there, you know, lounging. So now he's in the ring.
And his lounge chair was out there, but he wasn't on it at all.
He never used it. It was weird.
Almost like it was part of the...
So this match goes, Peter Avalon's music.
Uh-huh.
He comes strutting out. Cody Rhodes music. He comes out. Crossroads match is over. That's what I thought. And yeah, I was like, you literally said, poor Peter. He didn't even get to wrestle. Like, he never gets to wrestle on Dynamite. Now he gets in the ring and it's over.
Well, Cody did say that he wanted to try and beat him in under a minute.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were mentioning it on commentary. I don't remember when he said that.
I don't know if it was either the pre-show or like maybe on Twitter or something. But yeah, they mentioned it.
Well, I guess commentary, we didn't hear it.
Yeah, we couldn't hear it, so.
But it wasn't over.
Yeah. What did you think of the Jade Cargill interruption, honey?
I don't know. I mean, it as a plot device, it moved things along, and then we had a match.
It's just very WWE.
It is. I don't care about this Cargill thing. I just don't. I don't. I'm not invested in it at all, and yeah. I don't know why, but I just don't care about it. So I was like, okay. From a storytelling aspect, that helped move things along, and now we have a match. But I just don't care. What was her motivation? Like, is she just trying to screw over Cody? It doesn't matter.
Like, she's there for Shaq, I guess.
But what does that mean?
Like, she's his representative because Shaq is eventually going to wrestle
so
Cody.
So is this all mind games? Like, what does she care if...
Well, I took it as Jade was... She still wants to fight Brandy because her and Brandy hate each other for some reason. Yeah. And so she's... I could just take it as her going after Brandy's husband because she knows that Brandy can't do anything because she's pregnant.
Right.
And so she's just like doing it to aggravate her. But like you said, Matt, Shaq is supposedly involved somehow. But even when Shaq was on the show, he was a nice guy. So like, why would he send Jade to, hey, Jade, go mess with Cody.
That's a pretty good impression.
Mess with Cody. That's great. Go mess with Cody. I don't know.
There's only one good finale to this story, and that's Jade Cargill versus Cody. Right. Honestly, she looks like she could take him.
Yeah.
She's got a better physique than Peter Avalon.
She is a very strong woman. I don't know why Cody's feuding with a woman that it's like, why is Jade Cargill feuding with a man with no female ties to any active member on the roster?
Right.
Where are they going with this? I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
Cody beat Peter Avalon with a figure four.
In like a 10-minute match?
It was actually really good.
Actually, no, Matt, you're wrong. Which, this is my main... I hated this finish. He didn't beat him with a figure four. He had him in the figure four, and then... Peter was going to reverse it. He has him in the figure four, but Peter Avalon, I mean, this is a legendary move. And listen, if our fans listening, I don't know if you've ever been put in a figure four. It actually hurts really bad.
Yeah.
So it's Ric Flair's finisher. It well, sometimes Dusty Rhodes' finisher. I don't know if Cody Rhodes actually beat somebody with it before. Maybe he's just bad at it or something, but he has this man in this legendary hold and he does not tap to the figure four. He taps because he slapped Cody. Cody threatened to slap him back. And Peter did not want to get slapped, so he tapped out. So the slap was more over than the figure four in this match. So that is what I had a problem with. I was like,
face, come on.
Yeah.
And how ironic is
the figure four meant nothing, essentially, is what I'm complaining about.
Yeah.
How ironic is it that Cody was facing his old gimmick?
It's like his old demons come back to haunt him. Next week, he's going to have to face some dude in like this weird plastic mask.
Next week, he'll face someone without a neck tattoo.
Ah!
Yeah.
And then Stardust.
Yes.
Which would just be Dustin Rhodes.
If a heel comes out in Stardust makeup against Cody, that would get so much heat. I don't know if he could. I don't know if like the face paint is like copyrighted or something.
I'm pretty sure.
It probably is. I don't think you do it. So Cody wins by submission, and then we move on to see FTR and Tully Blanchard. And they're talking about being ranked number one in the tag team rankings. The Jurassic Express bust into the room. Marco Stunt was wearing like an arm sling or something. I don't think it was legitimate because on Dark, like he was not really selling it. Like, he was, like, pretending that he was hurt, and then he started dancing, and Luchasaurus would yell at him like he's a little kid and he's not taking care of himself. And then he would, like, oh, yeah, my arm hurts. And Luchasaurus would turn away, and he'd start dancing again. So, just being silly. But all three of them bust into the room, and Jungle Boy cuts an acceptable promo.
Yeah.
And tells Dax that, or it says, you know what, he's sick of this. I can beat either one of you one-on-one. Dax kind of, like, pushes Cash back a little bit and says, you know what, that's fine. I'll take you, and I don't need, you know, Cash or Tully out there to beat you. And Luchasaurus says, good, I'll be out there, and I will make sure that they don't interrupt in this match. And, yeah, that's
pretty much. You know, it would be better if they said, hey, let's just not have anybody ringside.
Yeah.
That makes a little bit more sense, doesn't it? Or, hey, if someone gets involved, actually disqualify them.
Right.
What a novel idea.
That could be a thing. Now, honey, you mentioned during this segment that Cash and I believe it was it Marco, were actually able to cheat out. So tell me this from a what's the word you said? A theater kid's perspective.
Well, I guess. Oh no, I was just saying that with all of them in the shot,
yeah,
it could have been framed a little bit more aesthetically.
Aesthetically pleasing.
They've got a wide range of heights to cover, though.
That's true.
Yeah, like two of them cheated out a little so you could kind of see them. Not in the WWE way where they're totally forward facing and they're looking over their shoulder, but right. you just kind of turn yourself a little so we can see you. But the others didn't. They just sort of stood. Like Jungle Boy, you almost couldn't see his face a couple of times. And right. I think that's something that we could tighten up a little because it's so much better from when you're filming if you can just see his face.
Yeah.
When they go, you know, face to face and they're staring each other down, then obviously then, but see, it's more impactful then because you weren't doing it before.
Right.
So that's just that's very much a nitpick, but I think it's professional. So
I gotcha. Micah, next match is Jon Moxley versus Nick Comoroto. How did Nick come off on television? Because live, he looked like a friggin' monster.
Yeah, so they were saying this guy is like 6'4", 275 or something like that. And yeah. I was like, man, he doesn't look 6'4". 6'4 is pretty tall. Then I remembered, oh, Jon Moxley is also freakishly tall.
Yeah.
I forget that. Yeah, he looked really good. Like, everything he did was pretty basic wrestling, right? They mentioned he's one of QT Marshall's students, actually.
Yeah.
He has a MBA, I believe they mentioned. Which is ridiculous. I kind of picture him as like the caveman commercials the Geico used to have. Remember the work in office building? I kind of see him as doing that. So JR had a good analogy. He's very Bruiser Brody-esque. Just a big guy, wild hair. He did a lot of, I mean, he got a lot of offense in this match, rightfully so. I think it would have been a little bit better if he was coming into it fresh and not someone who's lost on Dark a couple times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought he was a great opponent for Moxley to have to overcome. If you're going to have somebody come in unnamed, don't make it seem like such a jobber match. Make it seem like Jon Moxley's actually overcoming something.
Yeah.
Which I think was a good decision. He did some very basic things, like nothing crazy, but I think he fulfilled his position very well. And on one hand, I don't think AEW should be signing anybody right now, but I wouldn't mind seeing him again.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, if AEW is going to keep signing people, they got to cut some people. They've right. got quite the roster.
Yeah.
And well, a show like this really shows it off.
I think a lot of people on Dark are not under contract, right? So they have a lot of workers who probably get paid per appearance.
Yeah. Right.
But don't have them like on salary or anything or whatever they have.
Yeah, I think they're paying like $100 an appearance or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I would sign
this guy. Pretty good for indie wrestling.
Yeah, this guy is, I think they think he's going to be something, and I think they're probably right. He's got a great look. I mean, he just looks like a monster. I'm surprised Vince didn't see this guy first.
Oh, and he'll have an offer. I'm sure he already has an offer.
No. He actually wrestled for NXT.
Oh.
So, oh, did he?
Yeah, but he was never on television. He was basically like in their training division, and he did some of their live events for them. So Vince had his eye on him, or at least Triple H did.
Well, that's another example of, I mean, it just does not look good on the PC of like how Tay Conti could never break through on the like NXT television ever. She was always a jobber. And yeah. She's been so much better since coming to AEW, just from working like dark, you know, AEW dark matches. And she's still green. I mean, she's still got some, you know, some work to do, but she's tons better than she was when she was ever on NXT TV. So, yeah. And this guy looks to be the same. I think there's something there and they really like him. So I thought he did great.
Still almost guarantee you that NXT reached out to him. It's been said with Starks, Eddie Kingston, Will Hobbs, every time they appeared on AEW television, even though they were shot down by WWE previously, they got a contract offer.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Will Hobbs even said on AEW Unrestricted today that whenever he tried to get on NXT, he went to the Performance Center, they told him they didn't have anything for him, obviously, which is ridiculous. How can you look at this guy, WWE, Vince McMahon, big meaty men slapping meat guy, and not think Will Hobbs is a guy you can sign?
Right.
But anyways.
It's because they're running through all those stupid drills in the Performance Center that have nothing to do with wrestling in the ring. Right. And they weed people out like that because they're not Marine trained or something. And it's just dumb. It's
stupid. So he said that they reached out to him and he was basically like, no, screw you guys. You didn't want me before. You know, I'm not going to get you now just because I'm like, it's like if you
back then, they didn't want me. Now I'm hot. They all on me as
it's
famous poet. What's his name? Mike Jones used to say.
Yeah. It's like if you're turned down by a hot girl and then all of a sudden some other girl starts flirting with you and now she wants you. It's like, no.
Yeah.
I've moved on to bigger and better
things. Taz.
To Taz.
Taz is Bay now.
Moxley won this match by making Camarado pass out, by the way.
Yeah, you get the rear naked choke.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Camarado did not tap out.
Yeah, did not. Passed out. Yeah. Passed out quick, too. Maybe a little quick, but hey.
Yeah. So after the match, Mox cuts a promo. He says Wednesdays are getting a little crazy. He doesn't care where you're from, if you're from Impact, if you're from Mexico, if you're from Japan. He said, I'm here to cause violence. Kenny, I know you brought in some friends, but the reality is I don't care. All that does is excite me. That just more violence that I can do and more necks to break. And it was great.
So this was a great promo, but I kept waiting for somebody's music to hit. You can't say, I don't care if you're in Impact, AEW, AAA, whatever, and not have somebody's music hit.
That's a WWE thing, though. Like, you absolutely can. We've just had a brain train to do the same crap over and over and over.
They've got this whole Impact deal. What have we seen other than the Good Brothers? They could make so much more of this. I mean, there's people in Impact that Jon Moxley has a history with.
Right.
That'd be good to bring them in. Shoot, I would love to see Jon Moxley versus Moose. Moose did a fantastic job at Hard to Kill. I don't know if you saw it at all, but he really impressed me.
That's what I heard. I didn't get a chance to watch it.
I would normally agree with you, but I'm sure if somebody was standing in the back waiting to go out and interrupt this man, they probably also watched him choke out this giant hairy man in the ring, and they're like, yeah, screw
that. That's right. Maybe Moose was back there, and he's like, you know, never mind. I'm good.
Oh, my gosh. Dosh is backstage with Eddie Kingston, and she tells him that he's going to face Lance Archer for the very first time next week. How will you prepare? And Eddie Kingston's like, I don't prepare. I just go out there and fight. And then he cuts a little short promo. Lance Archer comes up, gets in his face. Eddie Kingston holds back the Butcher and the Blade. Lance Archer says, I want to see if you can beat me one-on-one. Don't bring your boys. But what the real great part was, Lance Archer was shooed away by Jake Roberts. And then Jake Roberts and Eddie Kingston got into a little shouting match. Jake Roberts said, bite me, walked away, and the crowd got a huge pop. Yeah. It was great.
I do believe Eddie Kingston does not prepare and only fights.
Yes, 100%.
Most believable thing on the show.
It's like when you ask wrestlers, how do you prepare for a match? Eddie King's like, I don't know. I smoke a cigarette and drink a couple shots of whiskey. I mean, you know, and I go out there and fight. That's what I do.
100%. The Invisible Hand is back next. And so Don Callis is in a locker room talking on the phone. Kenny Omega comes in wearing a purple paisley shirt.
It was beautiful.
It's the best look he's had so far.
It definitely is. I'm
some
not a big
like
fan
blue jeans, I think, and these thick brown cowboy boots, which I saw someone on Reddit say Kenny Omega is the biggest heel in the world because he left his tag team partner and then stole his look.
True. That's basically Hangman. I didn't even think about that. The Beast dressed as a cowboy.
Yeah.
Yes. He's a cowboy without the hat. 100%.
He comes out with a hat next week.
Yeah.
Money on it.
I'm down. Don Callis is talking on the phone. Kenny comes in to chat with him. And Don Callis turns around. And his face is all beat up. And Kenny's like, what's going on? What happened? And Don's like, I don't know, man. I fell over. Ha, ha, ha. And Kenny's like, no, who did this to you? And he like touches his face and Don goes, ow. Oh, sorry. Because he's Canadian. Because you have to apologize for everything if you're Canadian.
No, he said, oh, sorry.
So Kenny's like, no, you tell me right now who did this to you. And Don's like, it's not a big deal. And Kenny said, I want to know. And Don said, okay, fine. It was the Bucks.
Nope. That's not what he said.
What did he say?
Yeah. What he said was like, oh, you know, sometimes Matt and Nick, oh, no, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, no, I shouldn't have said
that. He accidentally mentioned
it. He slipped that it was Matt and Nick.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, then Alex Marvez just shows up randomly.
Like another weird dream.
It's like pops up and he's like, oh, are you saying that the Young Bucks attacked you? And Don Callis is like, what are you doing here? Get out. Do we have any privacy in this room? And he like shoves him out and then it ends. And that was one of the most unintentionally hilarious things I've ever seen.
Honestly, Alex Marvez is getting a lot of the pops lately.
Yeah.
He's great. He's great in his role.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, where are they going with the story? Did the Bucks actually beat up Don Callis, or is he making it up?
He's absolutely making it up.
He's making it up, and he's trying to get Kenny to turn on him.
He's going to use that footage from earlier combined with the fact that he's got bruises. And, yeah, I guess it all makes sense. He planted the camera there.
Yeah.
So they would have that footage, and then he backed up into it and went, or whatever. Yeah, because, I mean... So,
the only problem with this is Kenny's already been a jerk, and he's already cheated. So why is he trying to get Kenny to turn on him? It seems like they did the whole thing where...
He's trying to get him out, and
I guess, but he's already on Impact, but
yeah,
he's trying to get, you know, the Good Brothers... He had them tag team with him, you know, 2 weeks ago or whatever. So I don't know. Like, I was like, if Omega was a babyface champion and he was slowly trying to get him to turn, it would be a little bit better. But I mean, he's already kind of been a jerk. So yeah, I guess they've still been friends throughout. So maybe he's just trying to cut, you know, basically sever the tie that's already kind of on its last thread, basically.
Right.
Yeah. And then but what are we going to find out? Is Kenny going to find out that Don Callis actually walked into a door? Or is he going to find evidence like that Don Callis is secretly a makeup artist?
Find out next week on AEW Dynamite.
I think that AEW does a great job with doing Shades of Grey characters. And I think Kenny Omega is an absolute dastardly heel. I do think he's still loyal to the Bucks. And I don't think... Like, I was there live, and he was kind of far away, but I'm not sure if he sold. Like, I don't think he was like, ha, 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 it's the Good Brothers. I'm not teaming with the Bucks. Like, I think he legitimately didn't know. I think the Good Brothers knew.
Yeah.
And I know Don Callis knew.
Yeah, the Giant Carnies.
Yeah. So, if Kenny did know, I think he's doing a good job playing it off.
I don't think Kenny knew that. They had a little segment on BTE, and he kind of no-sold it as well. Obviously, the Good Brothers are carnies. They're like, oh, we just happened to be on our ring gear. And, oh, we thought tapings were here.
Yeah.
It was kind of hilarious.
I did love when Gallows was like, you know, we hate wrestling.
Yeah. He's like, we wouldn't just come here and wrestle. And he's like, yeah, they do hate wrestling. Yeah. Like, surely AEW is not trying to tell us that Matt and Nick Jackson of the Young Bucks beat up this old man, right?
Right. Yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Although I wouldn't put it past them. Like, I would be okay with it. Don Callis is a jerk. Top Flight and Matt Sydal versus Private Party and Matt Hardy, which came off amazing live.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I know we were talking about it, Micah, and you did not like it. So tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, so this match...
It was just really sloppy, right?
It's really sloppy.
And it was so really many cool things that you never see.
Yeah, like Top Flight
and never Matt Sydal. You don't see it every week on AEW?
Yeah, they did like the Boston Crab thing. Where Top Flight both had a half crab. And yeah, like there were lots of things in this match that I just thought was really cool.
I don't know. I didn't think this match was good. There was a lot of botches. Top Flight is obviously very young. Private Party is very young. Matt Hardy is obviously very old. Matt Sydal is still great. I don't know. It didn't come off good.
Darius absolutely murdered Matt Hardy with a suicide dive.
I was going to say that. That was the one positive away from this match. I want people to look at that and see that's how... Okay, so first of all, it probably hurt like crap to be Matt Hardy in that situation. But that's how suicide dives should look, because he didn't wait for Matt Hardy to be in place. And I'm sure some people are like, oh, he's young, it wasn't safe, blah, blah, blah. If you're going to do a suicide dive, make it look like that.
Yeah.
It looked like it actually was effective. It looked like it hurt him. It didn't look like they choreographed it. That was great. But there were a lot of really poorly choreographed moves in this match. There was a lot of sloppy work, quite a few botches. I don't know, like, I always feel that way about Private Party matches. I know a lot of people are high on Private Party. They're always a little sloppy for me and way too choreographed. And getting them together with Top Flight, I don't think was a great combination, because they're both very young and they're both kind of spot monkeys, really. I mean, let's be honest. And then just let's go ahead and spoil it, the out of nowhere heel turn by Private Party.
Was it out of nowhere, though?
Yeah, it was out of nowhere. They've been complaining about Matt Hardy being a jerk for weeks.
Well, let's be honest. This whole story's kind of been rushed. Like, they signed the contract with Matt Hardy. They knew about the percentage cut because they talked about it, I think, on BTE, maybe.
Yeah.
But then they brought it on TV, and then they just signed the contract, didn't even look at it. And then the very next week, last week, they complained about it. And I was like, I don't feel sorry for these guys at all. They should have had their lawyer look at it, or they should have read it or something. So yeah. I didn't care about that then, but that could also be, they could have worked that, stretched it out a bit longer. Like, maybe Hardy is good for them to start with, and then he starts taking more than he has to, or starts taking things that they didn't see, or gives him a revised copy. And it's like, oh, I just made a couple of things, but nothing really big. It's still the same, you know, and they sign it because Matt Hardy's their buddy. And then he starts screwing them. But they kind of just went straight to, hey, we don't like this contract. Matt Hardy's, you know, brought them to the dark side. And yeah, so they basically did three parts of the story in like 3 weeks.
To be fair, the night before AEW on Impact, Matt Hardy and Private Party showed up, and Private Party won a number one contenders match against James Storm and Chris Sabin for the Impact Tag Team Championships. And afterwards, they were on a private jet, and Matt Hardy said, hey guys, this is what I'm here for. This is why you need to stick with me. And they agreed with him. So although it was rushed, that was a good reason. And that was all over the internet and Twitter. So that was seen, even though it's not on Dynamite.
Because before then, they were wrestling in front of 1 million people beating the Young Bucks. Now they're wrestling in front of 100,000 people beating a not real tag team.
But... for the titles, Micah.
Ah.
For the titles. They've never. It's all about the gold, baby.
Yeah.
Anyway, Matt Hardy and Private Party won this match.
Jim on Impact.
Isaiah Cassidy hit Dante Martin with a chair, and that is how the match finished. We had hill turns. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was sloppy for sure. It wasn't their best match, but it was fine. It wasn't horrible.
MJF and Wardlow are in the back. They pop in on Inner Circle minus Jericho. And MJF says, look, if it was up to me, I wouldn't do this match tonight. But Jericho's the leader. What he says goes. And everyone kind of agrees with him. He fist bumps everyone. And Sammy gets in his face. And he's like, if it were up to me, things would be very, very different. The guys hold him back. MJF goes for a fist bump. And Sammy says, we're not there yet. He says, all right, they leave. Penelope Ford and Layla Hirsch is next, and we're gonna breeze through this one, just in interest of time. There were some good spots in this match. There was the one spot, honey, where Layla did the Ford flip onto Butler Chucky T.
Mm-hmm. That was great.
Charles, and Kip Sabian.
Charles Taylor.
Yeah, Charles Taylor, because he's a butler, so it's Charles instead of Chuck. I thought Penelope Ford did a fine job filling in for Nyla Rose. I think Layla Hirsch is good and has, when she receives some work, will be a good future star. She's got a cool look. I think I described her as, a mini Taz? I think it was.
Taz.
It was a Taz. I can't remember what I said.
Can't be much minier than Taz.
She's kind of like a mini Ronda.
Yeah.
I thought about that.
She does look like a mini Ronda, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. But I thought the match was fine. Did either any of you, did you hate the match?
I thought it was good. They made Layla look pretty good. And the only problem was the finish. It was kind of WWE dumb babyface. I mean, you could make the argument she's young, but she was like in control, dove out onto the, you know, to the heels for like no real reason. And it cost her the match. And I feel like, I mean, we talk about this in the main event too, but I feel like they were also rushed for time because they didn't even let the girl get out of the ring before Miro was in there and they were doing their final segment. But basically I'll just go ahead and say after the match, after Penelope picked up the win, Miro was like immediately in the ring with Charles Taylor and Kip Sabian with Penelope Ford. And I mean, they had just been dove on and they were like already recovered. I mean, she's a small woman, but still. So they were in there and basically Miro makes Charles, who is talking to Orange Cassidy in the crowd, makes him tell Orange that Miro is his new best friend. I actually was not, because of the finish being kind of weird and you know, everything kind of feeling rushed to start with, I was not as big a fan of this, but I actually loved Miro. And then I loved, maybe even better, Charles Taylor, who was like, just every time Miro touched him, he would like sell it. He would, he was fake smiling the entire time for Miro, like with this, like a little kid when you tell him to smile and they don't have figured out how to smile yet. It's basically how Charles was acting. He tells Orange that Miro's his best friend and Orange like, just like stands up and like slow walks away, like a sad, you know, movie of the Hulk, but the ending of the Hulk when he's like walking away, the TV series with like the sad music playing. I wish they would have played the sad music. It would have.
Orange Cassidy tweeted a heartbroken emoji.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So yeah, thumbs up for me for this final segment.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I don't love the Miro story so far, but I kind of do like Chuck Taylor as the butler. I think it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I do think it buries him a little bit. Like, he needs to get some sort of payback when this is all over with.
We had a prediction. Yeah, that Miro like and Charles just sort of end up friends, besties by the time it's all over, right? Like Miro's like, I need somebody to beat at this video game. Sit down and play. And so, it, like, you know, of course he does it begrudgingly. But then, as the hours pass, you know, they start sort of giving each other a hard time. You know, sharing a snack. And then by the time it's all over, they're best friends. They're buddies.
I'm in.
I think I said this from the jump because Kit or Chuck was very, very, he wasn't reluctant at all. He basically accepted the match with, you know, nothing to gain for himself when he went up against Miro. And I kind of thought like, hey, if he's going to be like basically in with these guys, I mean, he could be a butler for a couple weeks, but when they go to do this wedding, he's going to be the wrench in there that just like throws it all. Cause he now has access to everything they're doing. He's their young boy. He's doing everything for them. So if he's setting everything up, he could sure enough bring it down. And that would be a good way to not make him look like a geek.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Backstage, the Good Brothers are beating up Pentagon.
Quote, Pentagon?
Yeah. Apparently it wasn't Pentagon. So I don't know if he wasn't there or whatever.
But I think he's still legit injured from his leg.
Yeah. So it was fake Pentagon. And Kenny Omega comes. He punches him and Don Callis says, don't use your hands, kick him. And so Kenny Omega starts kicking him, like, show him the boot. And so he takes off his boot. He looks at the camera and he's like, these are my boots. So he's like so excited about his boots. And then he jams them in Pentagon's eye. They yell, no es bueno, which I don't know what that means. I've got no idea.
It's no good.
Yeah. And they laugh and leave. It's great. Yeah.
Honestly, I thought this was a really good segment, minus the fact it was a fake Pentagon.
Right.
They
did not leave the camera on him long, though.
Yeah. I like Kenny's whole look he's got going on tonight. I like the way he's carrying himself. I thought that was really good. I think he just needs a good foil at this point.
Yeah. That's fair. They announced a Women's World Championship Eliminator Tournament to determine the new number one contender. And I don't know if this was on purpose, but there were two brackets, and on the bracket on the left, there was a United States flag behind it, and the bracket on the right, there was a Japanese flag behind it. So it makes you wonder if either the Japanese girls have made it back, or if they're going to wrestle, if maybe this is going to be a YouTube show instead of being on Dynamite, and then they're going to wrestle in Japan, maybe?
Man, if they do another tournament on YouTube, that just really buries their women's division even more, though, right? And like, I mean, kind of. Sasha said she's going to be there on Twitter. She said something about wrestling in it. But that just really buries their women's division, man. It's like,
see, that's what I said, but care
about you enough.
The YouTube show was so much fun. The women's tag team YouTube show.
Yeah, it was good.
I loved it. Yeah.
But where was Sheeta on TV this week? She wasn't.
She wasn't there.
Yeah. I don't know.
So all the other champions were on TV.
I hope we get Yuka and Riho and maybe another couple new faces in there. Because I think they need some fresh new faces. Like, fresh new faces, but they need some fresh new faces that are experienced talent, you know? Which I think getting the women from Japan is kind of perfect for.
Yeah. Do want Chris Statlander. Hope she's doing better. Mm-hmm. Don't want Tessa Blanchard. Don't want that toxicity in the locker room. So we'll pass.
Now she can stay on over there with Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, it's fine.
Wait, there's one person who was there that we haven't talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're sitting there, and I'm looking over at the... Is that the heel side?
Yeah.
Okay, the heel side of...
I was wearing a shirt this heel.
Ring side.
Uh-huh.
And there's this kid down there. I mean, I say kid, he looked like a young guy, right? Mm-hmm. So young guy, blonde hair, pink shirt that says heel, and pink sneakers. And I'm sitting and watching him, like... move and his mannerisms, and I'm thinking that looks like Dolph Ziggler from here. And I'm thinking that looks like Dolph Ziggler, and I'm like, well, obviously Dolph Ziggler didn't leave WWE to come and sit ringside at AEW unannounced.
Yeah,
but gee, it sure looks like him. And then I mention it to you, or you did. I mentioned it to Matthew, and he said he's thinking the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then how did we arrive at the answer?
So I'm sitting there, and I noticed that his shirt said heel. And that's the Dolph Ziggler thing. And you mentioned, he's like, you know, he's got blonde hair, pink.
His movements.
He looks just like him. And I said, you know who looks just like Dolph Ziggler? His little brother. So I looked it up, and it was his little brother, Ryan Nemeth.
Really? Yeah. Because I noticed him on TV, and I was like, that looks just like Dolph Ziggler.
They look the same.
Just like
They're him. The same guys.
Yeah.
So he's Kerwin White, basically.
Why don't they bring him in as Ralph Ziggler?
Yeah.
This is Ralph Wiggler. He's here to wrestle.
Ralph Wiggler.
I would pay money for that. That'd be great.
So anyways, there you go.
Mm. Main event time. And we were right. We were all right. The main event was the Triple Threat Inner Circle Tag Team match. Jericho and MJF came out with a brand new entrance music, spoiling that they were going to win. Jake Hager and Sammy Guevara came out, and they got a shout out from Sammy Hagar, which is really cool. Who apparently is good friends with Chris Jericho. He got him to do it. And Proud and Powerful, who should have won this match, came out last.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah, they did not. Jericho and MJF won, because of course they did. Okay. Again, I'm super biased because I liked all the matches. But this match was such a banger. It was so good. Did it come off good on television? Because live, it was incredible.
No.
Okay. I'll hear from you. I didn't want to hear it.
I thought this match, again, was kind of
You don't spicy. Like these big multi-man matches, though. They're not for
bias,
you.
Bias.
Yeah.
I have liked them in the past. I thought this match was sloppy. Jericho did not look good. Jericho hasn't looked good since...
He did mess up the Lion's Salt.
Which wasn't entirely his fault.
Next week to fix it.
Wasn't entirely his fault. Sammy Guevara actually got in the way of his gait in his run. So he kind of like stood on the rope instead of jumping up on the rope as he normally would. And if you mess up, if you like change how you've been doing a move for like 30 years,
right,
you're probably going to mess it up. So I don't put that on him. But man, throughout this whole match, he just wasn't very good. I didn't think like he seems gassed. He seems... like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if he needs to work on his cardio or what. I'm sure he's much better than me, so I can't fault him too much. But man, you're a professional wrestler and you're one of the top guys in the company. I feel like he should be putting a little bit more work in, or maybe it's his age catching up to him. I don't know. I feel like maybe he's probably just drinking too much, if we're being completely honest. But yeah, he didn't seem great in this match. Jake Hager actually was one of the stars of the match for me.
Hager got some pops.
Yeah.
I was just about to say, my favorite part of the match was when Jericho grabbed, what was the name of the bat? He's got a name for it.
Floyd.
Yeah.
He brought in Floyd and just like turned, and Hager's just like standing there, and Jericho just like shrugs and he just boots him to death. Like,
it was so good.
So hilarious.
Hager did the same thing with MJF. MJF pulled out the ring.
Right.
And Hager punched him in the face. Yep.
Yeah.
The crowd liked it. And I felt good about that because I think Hager hasn't gotten a lot of, you know, love from the crowd. And I like that. I really did.
Yeah. Deadpan funny Jake Hager is better than monster killer Jake Hager or redneck weirdo Jake Hager.
Like, we really need him to do some more poetry. Like, I really enjoyed that. I need more of that.
Yeah, I really hate, and I said it last week, I told you I was going to crap on this match if Proud and Powerful didn't win. I despise the fact that Proud and Powerful lost.
That's fair.
I hate everything about it.
Whole point is they're slowly going to start, it's MJF basically. He's going to start, he's getting the trust of all these guys, he's going to get them on their side, and he's going to screw them. It's just how we all know it's going there, and to further that, him and Jericho have to be buddy-buddy and be the tag team. And it's the heel move because we both either want Proud and Powerful or want Sammy Guevara and Jake Hager.
Yeah. It better lead to a face run where they win the titles, by God.
Yeah, they might.
this is appropriate for the story that they've been telling so far. I think what happened makes sense.
They've got action figures now.
Great action.
Kyle, is Micah being too nitpicky?
I mean, it wasn't. It had its, you know, spots where they, I mean, obviously Jericho botched the lion salt and it wasn't the greatest. I mean, there was, I could see what he's saying. There's just certain spots when you're, you know, it was kind of very just planned out. You know, it didn't.
It was discombobulated too. Like, it seemed like it was planned out, but things didn't go to plan.
Yeah. It's chaotic is a good way to put it. So, it wasn't the best match, but I mean, it had its moments, so I could see both sides of it. Like I said, I laughed out loud at Jake Hager, so like, I enjoyed it. It was fine. I didn't think it was great, but it was fine.
Okay, man, it came off great live. Mm-hmm. Like, we loved it. It was so good. But you know, I think sometimes when you're, because you can't sit ringside, right, in AEW shows, so we have pretty good seats and we're pretty far away. So I could see maybe us overlooking some botches or we can't see them or something because, you know, we are only seeing it from one specific, very specific area and from one vantage point. So I get it. I loved it. It was good.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. How did the show end? Because as the match was ending and, like, they were all fist bumping, JR and Tony Schiavone and Excalibur took off their headsets and, like, the match had just ended.
They ran long on time because basically as soon as the match ended, the show ended.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like the match ended. Jericho is like looking at the camera and JR's like, all right, we're running out of time. Good night. Pretty much.
And they came up and they're like, oh, thanks for, you know, tuning in. But like there was no reprieve after the pinfall. So I feel like they were running long from the Miro segment on, like they were just trying to fit everything in towards the end of the show.
I almost thought they were going to do a three-way draw, which I think would be an interesting booking. But no, they got the pin in there and just ran out of time.
Yeah, they have after the show was over, they all fist bumped except for Sammy and MJF, hugged and that kind of stuff, and they all went and did their middle finger thing in the middle of the ring, and then they left. So
I think even during the match, JR said something like, what's the time limit of this match? And Excalibur or Schiavone or somebody said, well, it's basically TV time remaining or something like that.
Yeah.
And JR like made a comment that it was kind of running long. So I'm pretty sure it was just a time thing. So maybe we'll get a segment next week to kind of further it from what they missed. If they were going to do that, make the fist bump thing, like you said, part of the story or something. Maybe they'll do a segment on it.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to grade AEW Dynamite. And you want to go first?
Yes.
Okay, Carol wants to go first. Go ahead.
27 penguins.
Uh-huh.
And one narwhal.
Oh, you added a narwhal?
Yeah, that's Revanborn.
How will you ever top that?
Well, it's 30 penguins is the max, so it can get better.
Ah, it's because He's a narwhal because he has the third eye. So the horn is the third eye.
I don't know. I just love Evan Bourne and I love narwhals. So, but polar bears are better. Horn.
It's basically a tooth.
Okay.
It is a tooth. That's
true. Polar bears are even better.
Polar bears are even better. So one day they'll be up. That's Micah said, how can it get better? So polar bears.
Polar bears.
Well, the polar bears would eat the penguins. So probably.
I was going to say, polar bears would beat penguins in a street fight. So
in a street fight.
Interesting. Micah, that's a great grade, by the way. Micah, what are you going to grade? What are you going to grade this show?
Let's say you have 27 penguins and Sting.
Okay.
Versus 27 polar bears. Who wins that match?
He is going to the snow. So, I mean, it makes sense.
I think it all matters. It all depends if Sting has the bat. Because Sting can take on all the polar bears with the bat. But otherwise, no, I don't think he can do it.
It's true. Honestly, I think I give this show a C. I think the in-ring
work.
Yeah, you say that, but C is technically an average grade, right?
Right.
It's below average for AEW. The ring work was sloppy. Not much really happened. I feel like the overall show itself was pretty sloppy, and it seemed very filler. So, I'm going to give it a C. Come at me.
Okay.
Come at me.
Kyle, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean... Honestly, I'm kind of there with Micah. Like, I think a C+ because I didn't hate the show, but there was nothing on the show that like blew me away. Like, I liked the opening segment; that was great, and there were like moments for. I mean, I like the storytelling that they're doing, but like, just compared to other AEW shows that we've come away with, like really loving, and there's like a banger match on there that was just fantastic, like. I almost want to give it a B- because it wasn't a bad show in like, but I feel like a C+ is also appropriate. It's not a failing grade, but it's not like great either. Like I thought it was fine. It was a fine show. There was some good stuff on it, but not a lot of great stuff. So I'd say a high C+.
Man, you guys are so negative. I want to be positive, Pete, or perhaps Simon Miller Jr., I guess. I loved every match on the show except for Penelope Ford and Layla Hirsch, which I thought was just darn good.
One of the better matches on the card. You're wrong.
I loved the Don Callis Young Buck stuff. I thought it was so funny. I thought it was great. Jon Moxley cut an absolutely stellar promo. It was so good. So good. I don't know, man. Maybe I was just hyped because I was there.
Maybe we need to go back and rewatch some of the matches to see. Because we did not see botches from where we were. I don't think. Not like you guys are describing.
I freaking loved it. I love the show. I love the show. That was fun. The Hangman Page stuff with the he said yes happening is one of the greatest segments in wrestling history.
It was
so funny.
Honestly, it probably would have been better if that was the way they ended the show.
Maybe. Yeah, but you started off with that high hype. Yeah.
They would have ran out of time, though. We don't want that.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, that's possible. But, I thought the show was great. I had so much fun.
Yeah, I thought the Hangman stuff was great. I didn't think the match was that great, but I thought the Hangman stuff was great. Okay. Also, Luther was on the show, so that's automatically a letter grade drop.
But he was good. He was good on the mic.
He was just fine.
Yeah, he did. He did play his role very well.
It was fine.
I think mine's probably more of a B minus. Honestly, it's around 80. Like it wasn't bad, but it was fine.
All right, I'm gonna rewatch it, and we'll talk about this.
Sure, can give it a C+.
I may lose a few penguins.
I do want to say, Matt, before we end the show, I want to pose you guys with a question because I don't feel like it's roundtable worthy, but I do want to hear your guys' opinion because I did love the opening segments we were talking about, and I thought the Dark Order is great. We talked about them basically going full BTE Dark Order. But my question is, do they need to still be the Dark Order? Do they need to? Because if you think about the origin, I mean, things can evolve. That's fine. But you think about the origin, the Dark Order is a cult group who are a bunch of losers, which, I mean, these guys are still kind of acting like losers sometimes. But they're brought together by a crazy cult leader man and... I don't know. Like now I hope that they work in a storyline that they don't, have a leader anymore. They need some kind of type of direction because they can't just completely ignore that Brody was the leader and he's just not there anymore in story. I mean, they've got to say we've lost our leader and just like leave it at that. And obviously they're going to evolve in some way, but should they just, you know, drop the music, the like the Dark Order music, the symbol, like the, and just like go in another direction? Like, what are your guys' opinion?
You want to start, Micah?
So if you were going John Silver, Alex Reynolds, and Hangman Adam Page, they should be the Dark Horsemen. Perfect.
Sure.
Oh. Okay.
Maybe throw in.
I'm not even break up the group. I'm just saying a new direction of like.
Yeah.
Because the Dark Order, like I said, it was their cult. It's like they don't have their leader anymore, and they're completely different than they are. I mean, it seems to be they're leaning more that way, and they're pretty much all baby faces now. So I don't know, like.
Yeah, and I if it were just them, I would say, yeah, call them the Dark Horsemen, give them some little cowboy hats with some black robes, mix them together, and kind of separate yourself from the cult thing. That'd be great. But on the other hand, like, they're kind of over. Like, do you really want to change a group while it's over? I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think of another group in wrestling history that changed identities but kept the same name. And off the top of my head, I can't really think of any. Obviously, NWO got kind of crazy, but they kept the NWO name, even though technically, I mean, they weren't like the Invaders anymore. They basically were the whole show. They had like 15 groups with the entire roster being formed.
Right.
Yeah, like, is it weird to have a babyface cult? Yeah, it's a little weird.
Called the Dark Order.
I mean, the Undertaker was a face for a long time.
I mean, I guess I'm just calling for like a rebrand. I guess like,
yeah,
I'm fine with keeping all of them together, like as a group. Like, I'm not saying split them up. I'm not saying like break them off with Hangman and, you know, split having an elite Dark Order group or something. Like, just rebrand. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Maybe what just change about? Colors. Maybe just not be purple anymore.
What do you think, honey?
I think it might be too soon, but it's something that we could work towards. It might be too soon following the loss of their leader to completely rebrand, but it might be something that they could do. Like you said, drop, you know, change a color, change a symbol, change something. Start, change little things here and there until over time you have slowly done, you've worked it in until it is a rebrand. But yeah, I think, I mean, it is something to think about. They are kind of a bunch of goofballs.
Yeah.
At this point, they're not big, scary cult.
And
I wondered if they were going to get Hangman, what that would do for them, because I feel like he would sort of take a leadership role, maybe begrudgingly.
Yeah.
And that might assist with the idea of changing the group's goals and kind of the way they come off.
Yeah, I feel like they just fundamentally have changed what the group is. I mean, for the better, honestly. Like,
yeah.
I like the direction they're going in, and I'm fine with it. But yeah, it's just completely different than it was before. So that's,
yeah.
Yeah, the only reason I proposed the question.
They can't change because Evil Uno cut a promo and said, what we're doing from here on out is in the memory of Brody Lee. And I think the reality is, at least for the time being and for the foreseeable future, they can't change a darn thing because they have to stay exactly how Brody had them set up in kayfabe. And in real life, I don't think they want to. I think they want to honor his memory. So I think that right now there is a 0% chance that it changes. Even though they're going to be more BTE Dark Order, they're going to be baby faces. If they were heels, they would just beat up Hangman, right? So yes, it is possible that one day they'll change, but I don't see it happening for a long time, and I don't want to see it happen.
Hey, listen, them beating up Hangman is still on the table because I'm sure they paid a lot of money for that Titantron and for those dancers and confetti and music. I mean, listen, Tony Khan's out there buying rights to music. I'm sure the Dark Order had to pay a pretty penny for that song they played. So
right.
Why hasn't Uno just stepped up as the leader? Because he was before Brody Lee got there.
He's too goofy now.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Like, it's not
being the face being the face of the group, and he's the goofiest of the goofies,
right?
Yeah.
He's King Goofy. I
mean, and he is Uno. He is the first one, so
right.
Yeah.
The exalted one was zero, then Uno, the negative one. I don't know. I feel like Uno should.
That's not how numbers work.
Well, I don't know.
Hey, Anna Jay's 99, and there's only like 10 of them. So.
Right. Right. That we know of.
It's true. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been episode 150 of Wrestle Life Radio. Thank you so, so much for hanging out with us.
Yes.
We absolutely appreciate you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Wrestle Life Radio and on Twitter at Wrestle Life Pod. B-Dubs, where can we find you?
It's Carolsen, Carolesenn on Instagram, YouTube, WordPress.com. Yeah.
Yeah. Kyle?
I'm on Instagram at Kyle.Polly.
And I am on Instagram and Twitter at WrestleLifeMatt. You can't find Micah on, as always, you cannot find Micah on the internet because he's hidden himself.
I'm a ghost.
He's hiding out in the comment section like the troll that he is.
Delete Ron Swanson.
Giving C ratings to everybody in our comment section.
Thumbs down.
Ladies and gentlemen, we very much appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening. We would not have gone this far without you. And we hope you all have an absolutely wonderful day.
Here's to 150 more.